on? Are we on?
Is the song over?
Oh, welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Didn't have to dodge any milkshakes on the way in, but it's got me thinking about milkshakes because the season's coming, you know, so...
It's always milkshake season.
Yes.
Just...
It sounds like they're pricier now than I ever remember, but I'm just darn old, that's all.
I remember
an old boy get a milkshake around here.
I remember when a quarter got you a bag of chips, a pop, and a popsicle.
Anyway, Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. But today we'll be talking about the public inquiry into money laundering in British Columbia, while we get to the bottom of why the rent is too damn high, and then what happens. And then we will look at the abortion debate in the U.S. and what effect it might be having here in Canada. Should Canadians anticipate something similar happening here? Should Conservatives win this fall? And then finally, the Canadian Museum of Human Rights took a huge step this week by taking the cultural out of cultural genocide. Might jumping this hurdle help us reach actual reconciliation? But first, we have to talk about extremism. I don't think that the two topics we are bookending the show with are actually too dissimilar, because we've talked a lot about right-wing extremism and hate in Canada, how it's not getting that much attention. Maybe that's changing. On the other hand, maybe it isn't. Particularly, we're going to talk about a couple of incidents. The first one, though, is in Kelleher, Saskatchewan, where a 34-year-old man who the mayor just said he never grew up, he decided he was going to...
Peter Pan?
I guess. He flew a Nazi flag and a Confederate flag on a radio tower behind his house. And then it seems like a First Nations man took it upon himself to do what the RCMP wouldn't do, which is go up there, take the flags down, and burn them. And it seems like Caleb Bowden, it was his name, though that's not necessarily confirmed because he hasn't really talked. The video was posted on his Facebook page, but it seems like he's gotten the lion's share of the scrutiny above and beyond the good kid. The good 34-year-old kid who is, you know, flying the bad flags to begin with.
Yeah, ridiculous stuff. I mean, Caleb, I got his name as Caleb Peltier. That was off APTN. But I think his online name is different.
Maybe.
The guy's a hero in my book. there's no way to soft pedal it, I guess. A lot of people didn't do their job. The mayor said he talked to the kid and he's like, oh yeah, he's going to take the 34-year-old kid living at granddad's house, whatever it was. Yeah, he says he's going to take it down when the rain stops. And then we didn't do it. Somebody did it for him. And
right.
Then, of course, what's the headline? The headline is police are investigating flag burning in Saskatchewan. This flag, in my opinion, should always be burned. There is no good form of this flag unless it's on fire.
Or in a museum.
Yes, with context, right?
Yes.
Rather
yes.
than just flying it. Turns out the people across the road were from the Netherlands and remember the occupation of the Netherlands by the Nazis. They were young people. And I think that the man was 97.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got up one morning and saw the flag, he said he couldn't believe that this was actually happening, as a lot of people would know that good portions of the Netherlands were liberated by the Canadians, the first Canadian army in 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what prompted a lot of Dutch people, among others, to come here. And this area of Saskatchewan, prairies, Ukrainian, Polish, all the people that came here to get away from all of that, and you got this so-called person that never grew up doing this. So I don't think anything's going to come of this. But, you know, the police say, well, there's no law against flying this flag. Is actually incorrect because
yeah.
I'm fairly sure it qualifies as inciting hate, among other things. Like, I don't know of anywhere in Canada where it's endorsed that you can do this, except maybe in the backwoods, and even then you'd have it, like, in the shed or something.
Yeah.
All of that aside, it was obviously put up to instigate something.
Yeah. The Criminal Code of Canada, subsection 319, prohibits the willful promotion of hatred. Well, throwing up a Nazi flag and a Confederate flag seems like the willful promotion of hatred, because these were states built on hatred, one for Jews and other people they deemed undesirable, and one for black people, or at least keeping black people slaves, which I would consider hateful. The Saskatchewan Human Rights Code also prohibits representations or displays that espouse hatred and for any persons or class of persons on the basis of prohibited grounds. Well, I think a flag is a display.
Yeah.
I think of flying a flag sounds like a display. So it's a bit rich that this good kid, this good 34-year-old kid, wasn't violating laws, because it sounds like he was violating both the criminal code and the Saskatchewan Human Rights Charter.
But of course, because it's a town population, 217 people, we do things a little bit differently there, right? And there was an interview with somebody, I think it was an audio interview, I saw the transcript, this guy, they talked to somebody in the area, and he said, oh yeah, like, you know, this was the area of Canada where the last KKK rally was held in the 60s. He wasn't endorsing what happened, but he was saying, you know, it took us a while to get over a lot of things. But it sounds like there's an angle to this that isn't necessarily just, you know, Nazis and Holocaust or whatever. It sounds like this was done to anger the indigenous community, and it just so happened that this
there's a reserve right near there.
There's a reserve right near there, and it sounds like from what the interview with this local person was, he said that you know, that is the greatest divide in these areas. You know, the communities are made up of however many people, and usually small. But the indigenous people are kind of elsewhere, like somewhere else. So I think what he was trying to say was that is where the actual line is here, that it's not, there's a tension between the settlers and First Nations people rather than, you know, he didn't actually say that it wasn't anything to do with Nazism, which of course it 100% is.
Yeah.
These guys, a lot of these racist guys tend to mix their symbols up. It was like the shooter who is obsessed with Rhodesia, right? It's like they just consider it all like, if I want to instigate hate against somebody, I'm just going to use these old, tired, and dead symbols to do it, right?
Yeah, I would hardly call the Nazi symbol dead, though, because...
No. Sorry. Well, like historical,
anyone,
then,
anyone
let's
who,
say.
Anyone who's ever seen an Indiana Jones movie knows what the swastika means.
Yeah.
So it's a bit rich that, you know, I'm just, like, this isn't a Church of Satan thing where people, you know, are part of the Church of Satan just to, you know, honk off...
Yeah.
You know, religious establishment types.
But there's any number of new symbols now, though, right?
Yeah.
Like all the, there's lists, scads of lists online.
Yeah.
As to what to look for in graffiti in particular, but also flags and shields and whatever they're wearing in Charlotte now.
The other decision, or the other thing that was in the news this week concerning extremism, concerned a $2.5 million decision against... Kevin J. Johnston. The J in Kevin J. Johnston, of course, stands for Jackal.
A jackal! Jackal! It's a jackal! It looks like a jackal! 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 It's a jackal!
Doesn't stand for jihad? No?
I had to play that.
I wonder what that was coming from.
Whenever I hear the word jackal, that's what I think of, is that Family Guy clip. Jackal! It's a jackal! So, yeah.
It's Homer J., but Homer J. is smarter than this guy.
His target, Kevin J. Johnston, who came in second place in the Mississauga mayoral race.
This is like Faith Goldie territory, isn't it? She was third in Toronto. He's second place in Mississauga, one of the most multicultural cities in North America, let alone in Canada.
Yep.
Comes in second.
Yeah, so he was basically making the life of a restaurateur named Mohamed Faki, which is spelled F-A-K-I-H, in case you're wondering where we're getting the pronunciation. He owns Paramount Fine Foods, which I believe is a chain in the GTA. By all accounts, a community man, a man who has prospered in his business, has never hurt or aimed to hurt through his words or actions anyone, but for some reason he is the linchpin of all jihadi activity in North America, if not the world, according to Kevin J. Johnston, which is why court found him basically libelous or slanderous, and that, you know, he was basically going around casting aspersions against Mr. Faki, when not limited to, you know, accusing him of having ties to terrorists in Pakistan, basically saying that his restaurant was a members only club for jihadis, that you'd had to either be a jihadi or have had to have raped your wife in order to get in. Just a lot of really base, disgusting things, including like one incident where he chased the Faki family through the mall.
Yeah, through Aaron Mills Town Center, wasn't it? Yeah, which is...
Not a strip mall somewhere. Aaron Mills Town Center.
Yeah. Which is...
I mean, both are bad, but here's in the middle of this major mall that attracts people from all over. You have Kevin Jackal Johnson chasing the Faki family.
And again, just out. One of the most diverse malls.
Yes.
People might not know this. I grew up in Mississauga and...
The Saw
and bailed probably about 30 years ago. But I still, you know, when they mention these places, I'm like, and that's what's so surprising about this guy emerging from Mississauga. The case itself was based on, I think it was like a liberal fundraiser and Johnson was outside with that. What's his name? Banerjee. I don't remember his first name.
Ron
Banerjee, who he actually apologized because when the hammer was coming down, it sounded like Banerjee apologized because he's, if I understand right, he's like a Hindu activist, right? Mm-hmm. He's got some sort of built-in hatred for Muslim people. Mm-hmm. He ended up apologizing because he probably knew where it was going to go. It seems like Kevin J is off the radar now. He's just sort of disappeared.
Yeah.
He's still going to have to pay the money somehow. Where is he going to get it from? We don't know.
Well, he's not going to get it from Patreon because at least I found this. I found this encouraging. He gets $19 a month from 5 patrons, which makes me feel good about my Patreon who's free, but also generally good about, you know, because, I mean, this is how people like Faith Goldie, and I would throw in people like, I can't even remember his name.
Somebody else?
No, from...
Podcaster?
No. What's his face from Ryerson? Jordan Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he makes large.
He
coins.
Makes bank. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is kind of a regular route. So
he's like the budget version of those people, right? Kevin J.
Yeah. He's the Dollar General version. he's actually been pulled off YouTube. Facebook is like reviewing his case because I guess when YouTube gets complaints about people being, you know, white supremacists or right wing extremists, they have to watch all the videos to make a determination. Which I think
does a bot watch them or does an actual person?
Which I call horse hockey, but words that I wouldn't use on the radio. But so he's understandably underground. But yeah, I found that the Banerjee, I call it like the hostage apology video because that does what it seems like, which also paints into the fact that Scotty's phone is ringing. So
it never fails. No one calls me, and then when the show's on, they call me.
That's because they know they know where to find you now. But yeah, the whole video with Banerjee is just like. These guys think they are all powerful until they actually have to face the consequences for their actions, and then they become, I don't know, like little snowflake versions of themselves. It's like, oh, I'm really sorry, guys. I didn't mean anything by it. No, you totally meant something by it, just you didn't think you'd have to pay the consequences. And I hate to say it, but it's because you think you're white and you don't have to pay the consequences.
Exactly. I can say what I want. It's free speech.
Right.
There was a really good line in the decision itself. In this fractious 21st century where social media and the internet now... See, there's social media coming to get me. Social media and the internet now allow some of the darkest forces in our society to achieve attention. These issues are numerous and profound, and their impact extends well beyond the borders of this country. And I think that's a lot to do with it. People feel now you get a microphone, a little camera in the basement, put a sheet up, and you can just say whatever the hell you want. And that is not the case at all. And there needs to be more of this, I think. There needs to be more burning of swastikas, and there needs to be more people like Kevin J. Johnson going down. And if they want to be journalists, they can come and do something like this in a place like this or do what you do online, like, you know, real it bugs me, really bothers me when these people are like, oh, I'm a citizen journalist. Or who's that guy that you ran into? It's like, I'm a journalist from the internet. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I almost said it. I'm getting amped up in here. And I'm wondering who's calling me, but it's definitely not Kevin J.
Johnson. No, you're right.
Johnson,
it's, but. You know, they want to be taken seriously, but they don't want to, you know, do the things that you do to take. And, I mean, I don't want to call the guy who tried to gate crash Andrew Horvath's event last year as similar to Kevin J. Johnson, or as he likes to be called.
A jackal! Jackal! It's a jackal! It looks like a jackal! Jackal!
Anyway, but...
Day of the Jackal.
Jackal!
But... Yeah, the problem too is, and I encountered this somewhat at the People's Party nomination meeting a couple of weeks ago, is that they don't recognize the problem. Some people.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And you can kind of, it's, I don't want to get too much into it right now, but.
Long story short, will the People's Party candidate come in and talk to us, do you think?
Probably.
Okay, good.
So, yeah.
That's excellent.
You can look forward to that.
Yeah. Tune in September.
Yes.
Or October.
If not, yes.
If not sooner.
I don't want it too soon. Anyway.
Tomorrow.
We're going to move on to BC politics, where John Horgan has had enough. He announced last week that BC Supreme Court Justice Austin Cullen is going to head a public inquiry into money laundering. This is a pretty serious problem because we're talking about like $7 billion with a B. A little over $5 billion of that is in just real estate. So the assumption is that a lot of this money laundering, criminals, you know, washing money through real estate is responsible for some of BC's exorbitantly high housing prices, not just the housing prices, but also casinos. Mm-hmm. Also luxury cars, and this, surprisingly, college and university tuition.
That really?
Yeah, that this
can
is,
you actually pay your tuition in dollars?
Not only can you pay in cash, people are paying cash, because this came from one of the ancillary reports that led to the public inquiry,
right?
Is that you have people applying in person at educational institutions, paying their tuition
in $20 bills
with $9,000 in a duffel bag full of cash.
That doesn't raise any eyebrows.
And then they withdraw withdraw, and then they get the check back for the amount, and then nice and clean and laundered. And this is incredible, because I can't imagine being upstairs on the third floor here, someone going to the registrar with a duffel bag full of cash and nobody asking any questions.
I honestly don't think here they have the capacity to do that anymore, but you never know. I mean, I guess you probably don't want to turn the cash away, but it would definitely raise some red flags. And yeah, this is something else, because it covers a lot of the things that are considered, well, problems to a degree in BC. Like you had mentioned real estate. Something else too, like this is where... supposedly a lot of the illicit drug money is going.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, $20 bills there. It's like, you know, dealers get a whole stacks of $20 bills because that's what comes out of a bank machine. They need to be able to put it somewhere. So whether they take it to the casino, which is an easy one, you stuff a machine full of money and then you play for a little bit and then you cash out.
Yeah.
Some of that too, though, it seems that like there are a lot of wealthy people putting loans on their houses and because they like to gamble. So there's another angle to it. And then when that house goes for sale and they've run up all kinds of debts, the house of the price in turn also goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these angles towards the real estate thing. I mean, and of course there's the classic, just sort of park the money in a wealth storage unit, AKA a condo, and then put your nephew in it or somebody in it for nothing, or just leave it empty. And that's something else that I've heard, that you hear about Vancouver as well, is like you see these condos at night and the lights aren't on, even though it's supposedly fully occupied. Mm-hmm. It's not really. It's just occupied by money. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know.
Or occupied 3 weeks a year.
Yeah.
Whenever someone's in town to do business or something.
So I wonder what's going to shake loose with this. And supposedly, like a few years back, and I didn't know this, that there was a gambling enforcement team. What were they called? The Integrated Illegal Gambling Enforcement Team, who had warned a division of the RCMP, who are the police out in BC, and they warned about this implicitly. They said, you know, this is a problem. And then the committee, for whatever reason, not proven anything yet, they said that they weren't hitting the bar, was shut down. And in terms of the amount that I believe that in those days, the numbers that I saw was that gambling was bringing in $3 billion. And this committee was costing something like $2 million. And the government of the day said, or just shy of $2 million. The government of the day was saying, no, that's too much money. And it's a drop in the bucket comparatively to $3 billion. So then, of course, nothing has been addressed. And it's very hard to go after laundered money because it's to know the amounts because it's difficult to find. Now, like you were saying about the duffel bags full of cash is one thing. But, you know, sometimes I don't think it's as overt as that. It's just kind of like, no. Let's put it here. Let's put it there. But yeah, anybody shows up with the bag of 20s is like, yeah, there's probably a problem here.
Well, it's not just that. It's, you know, the real estate costs is, you know, you have, there was one instance they found where a housewife had bought a dozen downtown row houses.
Oh.
So, you know, somehow a buy housewife has money lying around to buy a dozen houses in downtown Vancouver, which is some of the most expensive real estate in the country, if not the planet.
Yeah.
You know, who's asking where's that money coming from? There's instances of students buying multiple condos and multiple homes. You know, where would that money come from? And part of it is like and this was brought up in one of the reports that there's a disconnect in the reporting system that these things aren't flagged. They don't go to law enforcement right away. It sort of depends on sort of humans seeing the patterns and then self-reporting. It also depends on people like brokers, lawyers, and home builders, that aren't required to report suspicious activity. And when there is so much money to be made if you're buying a house, who's making the money? Well, those are the three people, the brokers, the lenders, the lawyers, the home builders. So when you're making so much money and everybody seems flush, even while there's like a homelessness issue and you know, a home, you know, in terms of people not having adequate homes, nobody cares because the money is so good and nobody's asking the questions that you think they would be asking, like, how does a housewife own a dozen downtown row houses?
Yeah, unless she's, you know, from the one of the wealthy families, right? You'd say, well, okay, right. but from what you're saying, there doesn't seem to be any of that. It's just like this money has appeared, everything's in her name, and of course, then when it's sold, then certain things will be paid out. And this, yeah, and even down to the opioid crisis, which seems to, you know, is just ongoing, obviously in a lot of cities, but all, you know, particularly Vancouver and the downtown east side is almost notorious in the country. I think a lot of that is to do with the weather, but of course other factors at play. And if the revenue that's being generated from that is fueling everything else, it is this circle and this cycle, right? But yeah, it you know, like you're saying, it's if the money is there, people don't necessarily care where it comes from, right? It's like if you know you're gonna fund all this, and I'm gonna make a wads and scads of cash. Do we actually care? And it sounds like the government is trying to care. And I heard this the report that's going to come out of this is supposedly due in 2021. So it's like Mueller. It's just going to go on forever. But that date is somewhat magical in that it's 5 months before the provincial election. So, of course, there's been some accusations of a bit of electioneering going on here because, as we know, for the past however many years until recently, it's been liberals.
Well,
who are essentially conservatives.
First of all, what else is new? Second of all,
exactly. Tell me something I don't know, Scotty. Yeah.
Like, I suspect the public inquiry will get at some of the systemic causes, but I mean, there is an understandable debate about what a full public inquiry is going to get at that the reports done so far aren't going to get. But also just like a question about if you're a college in British Columbia and you have people dragging duffel bags full of cash through your hallways, why don't they just create a law now that says, you know what, you can't pay your tuition in cash. You know what, if you have enough cash to fill a duffel bag, you probably have enough cash that you can open a bank account and get a book of 20 checks so you can just bring the check to the registrar or pay it online or something.
Be like, I don't believe in banks, man.
Well,
something.
I don't like, nobody likes banks.
No, but you need a better excuse than just, why are you coming here with all this money?
Yeah, like, you were saving it in your mattress all these years to go to college?
Yes, I was.
You know, I don't understand why this isn't a red flag because, again, I can't see somebody going upstairs to the third floor with a duffel bag or a suitcase full of cash and the registrar being, okay, welcome to the University of Guelph.
Did they give any indication as to how often that happens? Like, is it numerous times? Is it?
Well, it's
sorry to put you on the spot there. I'm just curious. Is like, because it sounds like a one off, but also like if it's a if it's
well, it's happening people often find, enough that it's a theme.
If people can find a loophole, then they'll.
But it is a loophole because you know I think typically transactions over 10,000 are flagged, which is why you have these $9,000 transactions. Mm-hmm. So it's a loophole to be sure. Like I don't think there's like a lineup of people with $9,000 in a duffel bag to go to you know UBC or. Or one of the other BC institutions. But, I mean, it happens often enough that it's flagged in an official government report as being, like, a serious problem and a serious way people are laundering money. But I think, unfortunately, people are sort of dazzled, and this goes right down to the real estate, because when you're talking about, like, $5.3 billion, that's a drop in the bucket, you know, in terms of BC real estate. And, you know, a lot of people are legitimate buyers. A lot of people are, you know, as you said, speculative buyers, people looking for places to park their money. And then people are just like bad faith actors who are, you know, parking ill-gotten money or trying to find a way to wash ill-gotten money. But money talks and people don't want to be the ones to say no to a big paycheck. And I think that's the big systemic problem of all that I think when we get this report back, I think what Justice Cullen is probably going to – what it was the too long didn't read of it is going to be like, you people need to stop being so freaking greedy.
Yes. And of course there are – some of the forces there too will be – let's just use the blanket term, the mob, right? So it's like there's probably people within this that you don't really want to mess with, so they'll probably have to tread – fairly carefully when they do this report, like,
right?
Do we want to name names? Is it libelous? Are they going to come after somebody? But yeah, something like this that seems so systemic, it's going to take a lot of action to shut it down, if they can even shut it down.
That's the other thing is that in one of the same report that noted the thing about the duffel bags, they noted that the police in BC tend to use a civil forfeiture system, which just means like basically take away like the ill-gotten stuff. Like if they bust a crime racket and that owns a bunch of houses, they basically seize the houses. Yep. The rackets themselves aren't necessarily broken. The gangs and the crime families aren't necessarily broken. Or it's the stuff they take, which you know you can always get more stuff. It's the people buying the stuff you have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's ways to do that too without necessarily, you know, going in there like Elliot Ness too.
Yeah, because wasn't there one story where they did a bust on a house and they went in there and there was like hundreds of thousands of dollars in the house?
Yeah,
like in stacks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Who knows where this is going to go? But
I think we know. But
we'll have to find out. In May of 2021, we'll give you the full report.
Coming soon in 2021.
Maybe just on the internet. Well, we don't know, but we'll see. If anybody wants to come here with a duffel bag full of money, just give it to us because they love us.
No, don't say
that. As long as it's not ill-gotten. If you just found it lying on the street, it fell off the bus or something. Or
if it fell off the bus, it's ill-gotten.
But no one claims it.
All right, fine.
We'll take any denomination.
Wow.
Things you probably shouldn't say in there. Let's take a break, Adam.
Yes, let's take a break.
Yes, before we get into
We're going to take a break and then come back with some more invitations to bribe us. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Emergency on planet Earth. The currency is murder, you a man of worth. They say the day is coming, drumming that you can't reverse. Watch the banner burn before the cannon burst. Don't chase an illusion, the nation hallucin. Hallelujah, taste of the future. The people, the shower, the pistol, the coward that's facing the suture. Lonely martyrs, magic carpets, dirty blankets, Coca-Cola, soul controller, holy waters. Middle East mode, sand glorious. Cheat code in Babylonian, the Orient. My superhero got the people power. Yassin and Yassin, you should heed the hour. With you and living kings, I mean it,
Well, they're packing a lot in there. That is A Tribe Called Red from their album, We Are the Hallucination. And that was R.E.D. featuring Yasmin Bey, Narsi, and Black Bear. Tribe Called Red. Playtown regularly. Are they coming to Hillside this year? They've been before. Well, you don't have to look it up. It's okay.
Google it.
Check them out. It's an excellent album. Great band. Fantastic band. Yeah, Trump loves them too. No, they played...
can you imagine?
They played... Yeah, I know. They played Hillside Inside at St. George Church. And it was a fantastic...
I'm bringing to Mar-a-Lago A Tribe Called Red. Phenomenal.
Do they golf?
They were at Hillside in 2014. But I don't think
they're that long ago? God, I'm getting aged. Oh, and I...
They were there in 2018, but it doesn't look like they're coming up in 2019.
Just want everybody to know that phone call I got was from the CRA robot. So the CRA robot calls you. Tell the CRA robot to
what a relief.
Don't call them back, because it's probably some kind of scam as well.
Speaking of robots, Alabama has passed extraordinarily restrictive abortion laws that actually don't even make an exception for rape and incest. It is the worst of the worst, but it is hardly alone. Alabama, Mississippi, Ohio, Georgia, Kentucky, Arkansas, Utah, and recently this week, Missouri have all passed restrictive abortion measures. All, I think, in a contest to see who can get to the Supreme Court first, where hopefully the majority five conservative justices, including Brett Hold My Beer Kavanaugh, will finally pronounce the end of the Roe v. Wade era. Which is interesting because I think we all know that what Roe v. Wade means, but I actually took the time to look up the actual court case.
That's worth exploring because a lot of people just hear it and they say, "What right. is that?" So long ago.
Because it doesn't even necessarily make abortion legal. It said that under the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, that women have a fundamental right to privacy when it comes to getting abortion. But the decision also had to balance the health and welfare of the women and, the prenatal condition of the fetus. So they basically do it on according to the trimesters, it's what they call the balancing test. So basically in the first trimester, supposedly there's really no restrictions at all. When you get to the second trimester, one of the things you're supposed to start considering basically the health of the woman, and then when you get into the third trimester, it's basically only if the life of the mother is at stake that abortion is supposed to be an option. So I mean, that's kind of how they slice the bread. But under these, predominantly these bills are like fetal heartbeat bills, which is just basically like as soon as you can quote unquote detect the fetus's heartbeat, no abortion for you. And we're talking about like in the first 6 to 7, 8 weeks of a woman's pregnancy. And as any woman will tell you, you tend not to, there's a good chance you may not know you're pregnant until week 6. Yep. Because surprisingly, women's reproductive systems aren't like machines in that every 4 weeks exactly you get your period. And I mean, I realize we're kind of mansplaining this being men and all, but I mean,
yeah, 100%,
I feel like there's a ton of men in these legislatures that don't understand this.
That's it, 100%. And, as I we're obviously sympathetic men here to a degree.
Yes.
But as you say, it's men. To me, this comes down to the men's obsession with not only women's bodies. And a lot of this, the science, it's based on junk science, where people have said, like you're saying, assigning dates and whatever. And this supposedly the fetal, I think it's Ohio, right? The heartbeat bill is like complete garbage. It's like this lump of cells is registering something on a screen somewhere. So it has a heartbeat. So you can't kill it.
Right.
Woman. Right? And that's what's the bottom line. Famously making the rounds now is the picture of the 25 men in the assembly in Alabama who have decided this, and it just happens to be a woman governor who signed it. But
I think a woman legislature is actually the person who brought the bill forward, too. I mean, it's not like a women versus men thing. There are women who don't mind.
No, it's a regressive system right. behind it, based on faith rather than actual science. That's what it's about. That's a lot of what it's about. It's not the only thing, but
it's the patriarchy.
This is exactly what I think of. When I think of forced pregnancy and what's going to happen in these states here, this is That is the patriarchy writ large.
I would argue it's not even based on faith, because I'm not sure what book of the Bible deals with abortion.
None. Right. It's not there.
But I mean,
and I'd fight anybody to the not to death on that, but it's not in there.
You have people like your friend Sam Oosterhoff.
Oh, my pal.
Who said we pledged to make abortion unthinkable in our lifetime.
Handmaids come.
Right. I was going to say this was before the Handmaids rolled up at his coffee clutch and he ran for it. Because heaven forbid you deal with a group of women in red cloaks and white hats.
See, and I have to say, like, the fact that Oosterhoff went to that, it was an assembly at Queen's Park, right, and spoke, and other people spoke.
He wasn't alone. There were a couple other MPPs who went to
There's that, too. And I have to say, and I may surprise you on this, that I don't actually have a problem with that. But, dude, expect the Handmaids, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to say that, because...
expect us, the Handmaidens.
People chipping away a lot at Oosterhoff because he's a kid and he's homeschooled and all that. It doesn't matter. The riding that he's in, St. Catherine's, whatever it is. I can't remember. You know that riding.
We do
that
our riding research
is,
here.
Whatever that riding is. Yeah, the name escapes me right now. But anyway, the Conservative Party could run a hand puppet in that riding and it would win.
They did. What?
Yeah. Whoa! Snap, crackle, and pop from microphone 3. Yeah, so... Yeah, and you know, not to make light of any of this, but it's like, you know, he said what he did, and it's like people lose their minds online, and then they get the Handmaid outfits on, among others that were there to give it to him, and that's
he's so high profile, though, right?
The deputy education minister, right. Which is also a joke in my book,
because he's never been to public school. Yeah, I mean. I find the chances of this coming to Canada really rare, because unlike Roe v. Wade, which seems to like thread the needle very, very delicately to make abortion legal, there's no law about abortion here in Canada. It's just like it's a medical procedure. Having said that, I think we get this all the time when this comes up, and we've seen that happen locally with the Garden of Grace down at the Basilica of Our Lady, we get our pants in a bunch about these symbols, and we don't focus on the fact that
the ads on the bus,
the bus and all that, and we don't focus on the fact that if you need an abortion and you want an abortion, you can't get one in Guelph, you can't get one in Kitchener Waterloo, you can't get one in Cambridge. You have to go to, you know, I think it's Mississauga. And, you know, the hospital won't do one, just like they'll do one if you need one, like medically speaking. But if you are a woman exercising your right to do what you want with your body, to abort a pregnancy, you have to make your way to the GTA in order to get that procedure.
Yeah. When they were doing those protests in front of the hospital, I had my own little altercation with that gang. It wasn't physical, but it, you know. Maybe I'll tell that story another time. But yes, you've touched on it. The number one issue in Canada is access for people in certain provinces. If you live in the country, if you live in these areas in Saskatchewan that we were talking about, good luck. I don't even know where you'd go. Regina, Saskatoon, and even then, maybe they don't have them.
Right.
That's number one, is access.
Yeah.
Because you can get one in urban centers. Like you say, Mississauga, Toronto, there's lots of choice, I guess, because choice is what it's about. But... It can be difficult, but we do have it here, and I think that's something that probably needs to be worked on. If we're going to bring anything to Guelph, why don't we bring an abortion clinic here?
Couch
that in something, but realistically.
I think that's correct, and I just think there's kind of no appetite for this, and
yeah, no one wants to touch it. Political hot potato. I mean, so that's why we're talking about it.
Justin Trudeau and the Liberals want to make hay of it because it's a good way to paint Andrew Scheer, who's Catholic and does believe that abortion is murder. It's a good way to paint him as an extremist. I don't know if Andrew Scheer would bring something like this forward. I know that Stephen Harper did so begrudgingly just to settle that element of his caucus, but Stephen Harper knew that it wasn't going to go anywhere and knew that it was going to be I was going to say a killer, but I didn't want to.
Yeah, it's a political killer. It's one of those, okay, we, you know, maybe we should just like kick this down the road and not really talk about it. Right. Maybe let's let the Liberals talk about it.
One of the loudest anti-abortion voices in the House of Commons actually is right up the road, Harold Albright.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what I can't get over is, first of all, these measures will not eliminate abortion. It'll just make abortion unsafe. It will make it difficult to get. It will make, in one of the cases, basically criminalizing the women who get an abortion.
Yeah.
It'll make people desperate, alone, afraid, and will definitely affect their health and safety. The other thing is that nobody wants to do anything on the other end, it seems, which is sex ed, like a full...
Chipping away at it as well.
Sex ed. If you don't want abortions, that's fine. Then you should make enough money available that every school nurse at every high school can stand at every exit in every school across the country with a bowl of condoms on Friday night.
Like it's Halloween. Just yes, hand them out.
Exactly.
Get rid of that curriculum that's on the floppy disk and bring it into the future.
Exactly.
By whatever means.
I mean, if Sam Ustinov is serious about making abortion unthinkable, I want to see him come out for maintaining the sex ed curriculum how it is right now and expanding it to make sure that everybody gets the message about how you not get pregnant in the first place. But he's not going to do that because he's homeschooled and that probably wasn't covered in his curriculum.
I just want to see him come out, but that's another story.
Oops. He's the MPP of Niagara West, by the way.
Niagara West? Is it really? No, where did he win the by-election, though?
They changed the borders before the last...
That's why I'm confused.
General.
Wink. Yeah.
In other issues of, shall we say, a delicate nature, the Canadian Museum for Human Rights did an about-face, and it is probably an about-face that has long been needed. The museum has for a long time characterized what happened to the indigenous people of North America through systemic racism for five centuries. They called it cultural genocide, but now they're just going to call it genocide, which is probably correct. Actually, no, it is correct. It's not probably correct. It is correct.
It's completely correct. And it's interesting how this came out because somebody... Supposedly it came out on Twitter that they very quietly changed this.
It's 2019 announcement.
Trump style. The tweet said they consider the entire colonial experience of Canada from first contact to today as a genocide. And this was just somebody asking them.
Yeah.
So if people don't know, the Canadian Museum of Human Rights is in Winnipeg.
Yep.
Funded by ASPR money, CanWest Global people. It was opened in 2014.
Well, and we know they're not investing in original Canadian programming, but that's another story.
And it was interesting who didn't attend the opening. They didn't attend for two very different reasons. Stephen Harper didn't go, said he had something else to do, even though he was one of the people, I believe, at the time who had spearheaded this. Also, the musical selection we played, A Tribe Called Red, didn't go because they said at the time that you're not spending enough attention. They were... In those days, not that long ago, they were calling it cultural genocide. So it was saying that indigenous people were attacked culturally and their culture was wiped out. Tribe Called Red and others, lots of others, saying, no, this is a genocide. And the classic UN definition of genocide that came in 1948 along the lines of, well, based existing because of the Holocaust.
Right.
But of course, nobody wants, at least... It's amazing how within 5 years the tone has changed. They just very quietly said, no. I wonder if the tone will change back should there be a change in government. Because a lot of this is that governments don't want to pay, in my opinion, because the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, which was a few years ago at the UN, initially when that was passed... By resoundingly, with the exceptions of Canada, which was Harper government at that time, the United States, Australia, and New Zealand. New Zealand would obviously, to be fair, all of those countries have now signed on.
Yeah.
And I think once that happens, it's not like you're going to withdraw. Trump maybe will try and withdraw. It's the kind of thing if somebody pisses him off.
Let's be clear, this isn't even remotely on Trump's radar.
No.
But if
somehow the wall gets worked into it, I don't know. But it is one of those things is like they don't want to pay reparations to Indigenous people. Not like the Catholic Church doesn't want to pay anybody that was abused. It's like, oh, man, if we sign on to this, this is our way of saying we screwed up. Lawsuit. I think that's what the fear is from the government of whatever day.
Yeah.
Rather than just saying, yes, we accept the fact that this was a genocide. There's been lots of apologies. Right? But that doesn't, does that really mean anything? It's a step towards reconciliation, but does it mean when Harper says we're really sorry about this, when we're sorry about residential schools, we're sorry about the abuse you suffered, sorry only goes so far.
Well, money is a part of it, but I think it's even just more basic than that, that saying that what happened to them was a genocide means, well, that someone had to create to commit the genocide, and that was our ancestors, and that was certainly my ancestors.
Yeah. And from Prime Minister One on up, right?
Yeah. My family, whose roots go back to like pre-Confederation all the way, you know, to United Empire loyalists, like they were on the front lines of a genocide. And I don't mean to laugh at that like it's funny. It's just, you know, when you
yeah, you're the result of that. Yeah.
Right. When you think about it that way, and like there are stories in my family about what some people did with indigenous people that are like horrifying to think about.
You definitely need to get all that done before those people disappear.
Well, anyway, I mean, this was
a total sidebar, but yeah,
this is already down. It's work on genealogy that my mom is doing in her retirement. But it's interesting.
Yeah, we're going to make a whole show. I'm going to interview you about this.
But it's tough to think about it that way. That your great grandparents, great great grandparents, and them were racist. That had a very racist point of view on indigenous people in this country and committed racist acts and genocidal acts. But that is the pole you have to vault in order to sort of, I think, get to true reconciliation. And I remember the Colton Bushi memorial that was here last year, last winter, whenever that decision came down. And as one speaker said, like, you know, this was a genocide and we all have to, like, say it was a genocide, and that was like a really profound moment, because you don't want to think about that. You don't want to think about people you're related to committing genocide. But I mean, that's the mental gymnastics you have to go to in order to, I think, reach true reconciliation, which is to recognize that this was a genocide.
Absolutely. And it is small steps, right? Like something as simple as this recognition, because the Human Rights Museum, I had a little bit of a look at their website, and they'd had this explanation as to why Indigenous people get in for free. And I was thinking that maybe they had that on the website because I've no doubt that somebody complained or something. That's like, well, why do they get in for free and do we have to pay? Like, it's some of the, why does something like Indigenous people getting in for free to the Canadian Museum of Human Rights merit an entire page? It's these things are usually like complaint driven. Somebody started went wow wow wow, right?
Well, Indigenous people don't have to pay GST either.
Well, there was an incident when I worked retail like 30 years ago, and it was the same kind of thing. And of course, they showed their card and didn't have to pay tax. And the owner of the business, I will not mention who or where, lost it. She's like, "That's costing me money," and I'm just the kid, and I'm like, "No, it's not costing you money at all. Like, it all sort of comes out in the talked back to, but." And it doesn't, you know, it's all of these little things add up to this big, like, what is the...
It's like literally the least we could do is give you a discount.
Yeah, because that's your right, right? And that's, you know, it goes to all
of... We took your land, your culture, your ancestors, your language. You don't have to pay tax on your chocolate bars today. Man, that's fine.
But I mean, that's a direct result of the treaties, which are all... seemingly not worth the paper they're printed on because they've been ignored summarily for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, another crucial and important part of reconciliation is getting that together as well, which of course is going to take probably the rest of time to sort out. I don't know what it's going to take. You know, there was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and that's, you know, commissions are commissions and they come and go. But it is all of these steps, all of these things and us... both as settlers and the Indigenous community addressing these things, two rows. It's two row wampum. It's going, you know, two canoes.
Because CBC actually had like they didn't put the full Convention of Genocide, the 1948 UN Convention of Genocide, but they put like enough of it that you can almost use it as a checklist. So it's defined as acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national ethical racial or religious group, including killing members of the group. Yes. We've killed members of the group. Ethnic. Killing members of the group. Did that. Causing bodily harm. Did that. Or mental harm. Did that. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Yes, did that. Have you heard of reservations? Imposing measures intended to prevent births and forcibly transferring children from one group to another. Yes, we've done that. It's called residential schools. So, you know, it reads
you've checked all the boxes.
You've checked all the boxes.
Yes.
And the only reason the museum took this long to do it is because it's a feel-bad measure. It says, again, that, you know, your ancestors committed genocide, and that's kind of what it was all about. And it's a duality that we all have to live with. I can take pride that, you know, I had relatives who, distant relatives who served in Butler's Rangers and fought in the War of 1812 and kept us from, you know, having to pledge allegiance to Donald Trump. Thank you. I'm grateful for that. At the same time,
I'm loving this history lesson, man. I really am.
Who mistreated, abused, and killed indigenous people. And we have to live with that duality. It's just the way it is. You know, we have a country we can be proud of, but it was a country built on blood. And that's just how we have to live.
And I would argue all countries are built on blood. But
well, true. But
I'll get into my origins from the peasant class
Germany,
and the Irish famine. But yeah, it's the same thing.
If you live
thing,
in
man.
Germany, it was like the Prussians versus this other group and this other group versus this other group. Here was, we had a bunch of people from all over Europe come to North America, and all they could agree on was that they didn't like the people who were here for thousands of years and decided that they were expendable in order for them to build this country called Canada. And, I mean, it's the same is true for the U.S. This is a uniquely Canadian phenomenon, but I mean, it's sort of like our
many
original
nations.
Sin, just as, you know, for the U.S., slavery is their original sin. And it's, you know, it's something that has to be grappled with. And I'm glad that the museum just, I wish they had done it in a way that wasn't like so explicitly Twitter.
Quiet,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this should have been like a major announcement. There should have been like, that the Minister of Indigenous Affairs should have been there, both of them. It should have been a thing that was coordinated. I mean, because again, the Human Rights Museum is based in Winnipeg, which is one of the most racist cities in Canada.
Yeah.
It should have been a big deal, and not should have been sent, like somebody asking a question on Twitter. It's like, hey, are you guys ever going to get rid of the culture out of cultural genocide? We already did it. Thanks for tweeting.
It's gone.
That's the part that's kind of distasteful.
Well, to bring it back full circle to topic one, when I was looking at that UN website, one of the people that was involved with that legislation on genocide said, genocide is a process. The Holocaust didn't start with the gas chambers. It started with hate speech.
Yeah.
So, and we go from there.
That's
so
right.
It's not often that the end of our show
we don't
leads
usually
right
tie
into
it all
the beginning.
Neatly together.
We're
going like
to start
that.
Doing that. It's,
yeah,
no,
like,
we're
like
probably not.
We actually planned the show. Anyway, that is it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it, and you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, or go to Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday, or get it from the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my political site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more sad news on Open Sources.
Oh,
and we will see you then.